And what about Iran? There are pictures coming out of that country of body bags lining the floor inside a morgue. Today, the country announced 149 new deaths in the last 24 hours, bringing the total to 1,284 deaths with 18,000 infections. But this week, the WHO said the actual toll could be five times higher. Iran's health ministry reported an alarming 15% of deaths there were people under 40 years old. And the health minister, remember that video of him sweating while trying to calm fears about COVID-19? Well, he'd come down with it. Our next guest, reporter Nick Pelham, is very familiar with the lack of information flow in this repressive regime. He was detained there last year for nearly 7 weeks after being arrested on a reporting trip for The Economist. And he wrote in The Economist's 1843 magazine, "Even in good times, Iran has a complicated and paranoid government." He was released and is home in London now with a unique view of how that government is handling COVID-19. Nick Pelham, start though with your detention. You were taken by a group competing with that country's Revolutionary Guard. It was both petrifying and a little Keystone Cops. Why did they take you?
To some extent, that still remains a mystery. Now, this is not a government which always wears its intentions on its sleeve. And indeed, it told me repeatedly that, you know, the case had been closed against me after several weeks of interrogation, only for then another lot of interrogators to reopen it. What they told me was that within a day and a half of my being in their custody, they introduced themselves as being from the intelligence organization of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC. They did put me in a hotel. They sort of upgraded me first from a detention cell, then to a safe house, and from a safe house to a hotel. But one of the conditions they put on me when they said I was kind of free to roam around the city was that I shouldn't talk to any other security agency, that their kind of greatest concern seemed to be that another arm of the state might get their hands on me. And I was very much their asset and they wanted to hold on to it. As far as I can tell, the capital has completely transformed from the time when I was in Iran. What I saw was a kind of buzzing, dynamic, culturally really vibrant place. And now, you know, people are hiding themselves away. They're self-quarantining. The place is pretty much ground to a halt, and it's ahead of the Nowruz festival, the New Year festival, when, you know, it should be normally the busiest time of the year. It's the festive season, and it feels anything but festive in Iran today. You know, this is a country which probably got the highest incidence of coronavirus when it comes to state officials. It sort of penetrated the heart of the inner sanctum of the regime, so it's really having a catastrophic effect on the country.
Well, Graham Wood of The Atlantic crunched a bunch of numbers, including, you know, papers from the University of Toronto and elsewhere, and said that there could be as many as 500,000 cases. And you mentioned Iran's hierarchy. There are 23 out of 290 members of parliament infected. If you extrapolate that to the population, it could be 6 million cases. And this is a country that is famously not just secretive, but delivers mixed messages. And you saw that firsthand. So let's talk about what happened to you. You were released months ago, well before the virus. You saw these things. You saw a vibrant Tehran. You'd gone to cover the impact of the new sanctions on Iran. And we've learned that it spread because of these types of religious festivals that you saw.
The numbers of those who are suffering from coronavirus, they're very alarming. They probably are, as far as we can tell, overestimates. It does seem that the officials are particularly prone to contracting the virus for a number of reasons. One, as you say, because of this connection to Qom, the shrine and religious center, the Vatican, of what is a theocracy, kind of where many officials congregate and where a lot of the bureaucracy actually stems from. They also tend to be old and so more vulnerable to the disease itself. Quite a number of them were victims of chemical weapons in the Iran-Iraq war, and so their kind of respiratory systems are not in the best of shape in the first place. So probably to extrapolate from the degree of infection amongst officialdom is probably going to lead to a substantial overestimate. That said, the kind of problem that Iran has is that, you know, it is such an opaque regime. It's a regime which is used to speaking out with multiple tongues, where, you know, it has a record of saying one thing and doing the other. And there is just an enormous extent of mistrust by the population at large, as well as probably sort of further afield in the world at large with what officials state. So in my case, I'd gone in with a journalist visa. I'd been given 7 days to go in. You know, to get a visa, you're going to be vetted and cleared by the authorities before you get in. And, you know, you would expect most governments to honor that visa. But because the regime itself is so cloven between multiple kind of vested interests and rival security agencies, you know, although I'd been approved by one arm of the state, it seems that another one thought that they were going to get their hands on me. And so just it doesn't always seem as if this is a particularly well joined up system or one that its own population can trust. And I think that's why you're seeing, you know, and whatever the regime says, you know, and particularly at a time of a kind of public health scare such as the one that Iran is going through, you know, it's not going to be believed. And you've seen kind of repeated cover-ups by the state in recent months, whether it comes to the reasons why Ukrainian passenger airliner was downed, where, you know, initially it was blamed on anything but the state, but turned out that the state itself had shot it down, or whether it comes to kind of election results, which seem to be massaged. When the state puts out figures, the first response of the population is to discredit them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and people who were very angry at their own country for, you know, the sanctions that were imposed on their own country, but also, as you said, angry at Americans and outsiders imposing those sanctions. How do you think they are responding to this virus spreading like wildfire? The Senior Advisory Council has 2 known deaths out of 39 members. That's a lot. How do you think they're going to respond to their government's handling of this, or do they have any choice?
At times of intense dissatisfaction with the authorities, the traditional response in Iran has been for people to congregate in central squares and to protest, and for those protests to get larger and larger. And that is just simply not going to happen this time around, partly because there's a ban on public congregation imposed by the authorities on grounds that they want to prevent the spread of the disease, but also because people are genuinely afraid of association and of contracting coronavirus. So for the time being, that kind of immediate sense of grievance is not going to manifest itself on the streets. That said, I mean, it is surprising since I left the number of shocks that the Iranian authorities have faced, some from outside, some from within. You know, they lost essentially what was the number 2 in the regime, Qasem Soleimani, who was the kind of head of the foreign arm of the IRGC, was taken out, assassinated by the Americans.
They the missile seem strike.
To be, yeah. They seem to be on the defensive regionally. Economy has been pulverized by sanctions and now by the impact of coronavirus, again, at the height of sort of the festive season. It's sort of like imagining the West without Christmas. This is a really battered, exhausted population, and it's a regime which has taken many, many hits. I suppose, as far as the regime is concerned, the population is probably even more desperate and therefore more dependent on what little the state can offer than the state is. And the state still has the whip hand. I suppose what's kept the regime going for quite so long until now has been its flexibility, that it's, you know, it does tolerate quite a large degree of individual dissent and even artistic dissent. It will pick individuals up and use them as tokens to very much emphasize that the authorities are still there and they're watching. But it's managed to tolerate quite a degree of evolution in society itself. It's a kind of, in many ways, a society as individuals that have kept pace with intellectual and artistic currents elsewhere in the world.
A little bit of a valve. The government allows
exactly.
a little bit of a valve.
So what must be particularly worrying at the moment is that, you know, as the hardliners get ever stronger within the economy and with the legislature and now perhaps with the executive as well, that it's going to become more brittle, and therefore, you know, although they appear to have a much tighter grip, the place is probably going to feel more brittle than it has up until now.
Yeah.
I mean, from that kind of that height of the summer where I saw a kind of joyous, you know, there's a real joie de vivre about life in Iran. And, you know, it's astonishing when you go there that, you know, if nobody had told you that this was a country under some of the worst sanctions in 40 years of the Islamic Republic, you wouldn't really believe it. Somehow people just kind of, they get on and they try and make the best with what they've got. And yeah, that shroud of vivre has now been sort of stripped from them as kind of people huddle indoors to try and escape the ravage of coronavirus.
Nick Pelham, thank you so much. That's reporter Nick Pelham, who spent 7 weeks detained in Iran while on a reporting assignment for The Economist 1843 magazine. His article is Trapped in Iran, and today we got his insight into how that country is handling COVID-19. Officially, Iran has the 3rd highest number of reported cases. Today, Italy passed China in the number of deaths.